recording, which I just did, the sessions are recorded and will be posted shortly after, and it will be available on Channel 9, hopefully later today or early next week. Now, the agenda that I have for today, outside of this quick introduction, is essentially a deep dive on routing and virtual networks and how that integrates actually with virtual appliances. And it's going to be some hands-on, more than maybe usually, and then open Q&A. But you know, as always, feel free to ask questions as we go. I realize I forgot to put one important thing here, is this is an open call. Customers, partners, Microsoft employees, everybody's welcome here. So please don't talk about non-disclosure information. You may ask questions. If we can't answer, we can't answer. If you want to discuss these things, I otherwise encourage you to talk to your Microsoft account team. So what's new in Azure for this week and actually this month? Well, for one thing, dual network interfaces for all Azure VMs, regardless of their sizes. So that enables interesting scenarios. You don't necessarily have to have the big VMs to have at least two NICs and play around with it. And the other thing is, and I will also rely on this in some of my demos today, is the network watcher that's now become generally available, which means that you can use it in all the regions. Speaking of which, I think the one thing that I've shown some of that stuff before, some of the network watcher stuff in other sessions, but one thing that I didn't show is the ability to do NSG flow logging. So how does that look like? I think it's worth for me to show it to you guys. So let me share here kind of my view of this. So there's this little icon here. That's the network watcher icon. That when you click on, you see this thing and you see where it's actually enabled. And this I probably shown in other demos. So for my purposes, I had to enable it in East US. And what I want to focus on here is really the, at that point at least, is the NSG flow demos. NSG flow logs, apologies. So if you guys are not familiar with NSGs are, quickly, they're sort of ACLs or access control lists where you have source ports, source destination. Essentially, we're filtering on the five tuple. So IP source, IP destination, and source and destination port and protocol, whether that be UDP or TCP. Now, one thing that was lacking before is our ability to be able to log on these. Our logging was rather the number of time one rule was hit, which was not that useful. But now with that flow logging thing, what happens is they are sent to a storage account that you see here. So VM storage, I just clicked on it. So VM storage, OLI, which stands for the three first letters of my name, if you didn't guess, and UWC, which was the US West Central region I was using originally for my tests. So what happens there is that the logging information is being sent to that account. Now, how do I access it? Well, there's different ways of accessing it, but certainly one way is to simply open up the, I've browsed the thing, and it will generate some files that look like this here. So they're JSON files, and you're going to find what the flows are. And so what's a flow? A flow is typically a connection where, you know, this number here seems a little bit scary, perhaps. I realized that I will zoom. Okay, so that number here is the actual timestamp, since for those of you familiar with this, it's the number of seconds that have passed since January 1st, 1070. But, you know, software will calculate this very quickly. And then the next field that you see here is actually the source IP and the destination IP and the source port and the destination port. And then U here stands for UDP and O stands for outbound and A means accepted. It could be a D as in denied, could be T as in TCP or I or O as in and outbound. So for those of you familiar with UDP 123, it's probably an NTP request being done by some virtual machine trying to get its time updated, right? So it's typically what it looks like, but there's a lot of things here. And you know, you could argue that it's hard maybe to analyze, but with some, you know, parsers, you can make sense out of this. And another great tool that we've created is we've created something here a Power BI dashboard that actually includes, and it could fetch this data in Power BI. So for those of you familiar with Power BI, this is kind of cool because you can actually see with some visuals, who's the source IP. And if you click on that, it's going to focus the other pieces and other, you know, graphs on this thing, on this specific IP. Or here you have the port. So who has been querying port 443 or 80 or 13 or 30,000 in that case? Why is that 30,000 there? So it gives you a visual tool. And of course, you could always parse them and put them in some other data visualization tool that you have. So I got a question in the IM here. Say, why is dual interface, network interface a good thing? Well, if you don't need dual interface, it's not going to change anything in your life. But for virtual appliances scenarios, there are many cases where you could have maybe smaller virtual appliances like A0s or A1, or you could play around with it without having to deploy a D2 that has two NICs, for example. I believe has two NICs. It's probably at least two, but you know, so now on every size, it is possible to have them, I guess is my point. So it's just to give you a quick look at that, at the NSG logging. And that's it. So we're going to get back to those tools later as I'm demoing some functionality in there. So, but before we go on to the routing and things, I think it might be worthwhile looking at some of the basics. So for those of you guys who are very familiar with Azure networking, you might not learn a lot in the next few slides, but for those of you who are very familiar with enterprise networks and want to understand how it differs or what's different, then maybe that's relevant for you guys. So a virtual network, think of this as some customers have VRFs or virtual route forwarding instances, essentially isolated networks, right? So we give you this ability. It's not a VRF, but you can think of it this way, where your network really lives on its own in Azure, and you bring your own IP address space. It could be RFC 1918. I mean, most customers do that. Some customers also use public IPs that they own. But if you do that, just keep in mind, if you browse Azure's internet, you will not browse it with your own public IPs. You will browse it with the Microsoft public IPs, because that's the IPs that we advertise to the internet. But within the virtual network, by default, everybody can talk to everybody. And there's typically an on-premise connectivity piece that we've talked about on numerous occasions in that show, which is either using site-to-site VPN, or it could be express route, or you know what? It could be over the internet too. So now if we dig a little bit more on that, there are subnets, and subnets are constructs that are built inside of virtual networks, and they look a whole lot like a VLAN looks like on premise, right? So a VLAN, but it's not exactly the same. It kind of divides the network in the same way, right? In /24 in my example, could have been /something else. The smallest block we can allocate is a /29. But for all intents and purposes, it does a very, very similar thing, a very similar segmentation. However, one thing you want to keep in mind though is it's not, layer two does not work like it works on a physical network. So there are some layer two things that work, like the HTTP ARP. They're required by the virtual machines. So if VM1 is trying to look for VM2, the guest operating system will do an ARP request, but Azure will respond to that, and VM1 will just send its packet to Azure, and Azure will send it to VM2. It's just that some functions are emulated, but you can't count on multicast or broadcast. So this is why high availability for virtual appliance and things like VRRP or HSRP or other, you know, virtual IP protocol, if you will, that would have a virtual IP that's shared between two devices, don't necessarily work. So there, you got to do it another way, right? And finally, there's the third component of it is network interfaces. Well, so network interfaces, they are objects that are child objects of virtual machines. So you see there that the NIC object has something called a public, has something called an IP configuration. And the IP configuration has both a private and maybe does not necessarily always have, but maybe has a public IP address. And right now it's possible to have up to 250 IP configurations on one NIC. So what does that mean? Well, that means that you could essentially allocate 250 IPs to a virtual machine. Typically not very useful, except on networking devices where it's extremely useful. So if you want to firewall things and have your firewall face the internet, and you want to allocate a public IP to one device that's behind your firewall, well, that IP would live on that external firewall's NIC. So this is where it's kind of scenarios where it's very useful. But one thing to keep in mind is that the first IP always has to be assigned using DHCP. It can be statically set in Azure, actually usually is, right? But the operating system needs to be configured for DHCP. The secondary ones, they're configured typically as loopback addresses. If you're doing this on a host or a router, maybe they're just, the thing is the packets with that IP, the secondary IP as a destination will by the Azure Fabric be sent to the virtual machine. So whatever the virtual machine does with it is the virtual machine's business. So we see a lot of these scenarios used with virtual appliances. And another thing to know is that, you know, routing and switching and these things works. Think of this as a big layer three switch, right? Where essentially those virtual machines, an Azure region is typically by all measures pretty big. There's hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of physical hosts, right? Depending on the region size. And there is on each, and the virtual machines obviously live on these hosts. Chances are VM123456 on my drawing here, they are not on the same host. So when the packet leaves the NIC of the physical host of VM1, it will go directly to the host of VM4. There's no gateway concept like there is on a physical network. So it's kind of different. So I see a question here. From Jose, can a VNet have multiple address space, each and subnets on each one of them? And the reason is yes, you can absolutely use multiple address spaces. Like in this example here, I have 1057/16, but if you need to, and in the example I'm going to show later, I do have more than one. So it's absolutely something you can do. And in many cases, you want to do. It really depends on the scenario. So just to show you a little bit of what this looks like in reality. If I were to just go into my resource group here, and I will browse a lot of things around here. This is all in there. And I will sort these things by type. So when you see this, you got the connections here. I know that this is ExpressRoute connections, that the last one is a VPN connection. And as I browse down, I see a lot of NICs we saw that they're child items. We're going to see how they're associated. And here's NSGs, network security groups, public IP address resources, and then got some route tables, interesting stuff we're going to look at later. So if I look at one example, let's say that test VM51 here. So when I click on it, I do see actually the network interfaces I was talking about. Most of my VMs have one NIC. In fact, all of them have one NIC, and I'm gonna talk about virtual appliances, why they can have one NIC and why they can have multiple NICs and what scenarios you wanna use this in. So here you see there's just this one NIC here that has a public IP associated with it and a private IP address, but if and a network security group. So if I dig and I click on this one, the child object, I mentioned that there's IP configurations here. I see like the basic things like the private IP, that's the main IP address. That's the first IP configuration. Same goes for the public IP address here, because you could have multiple IP configurations. If I click on IP configurations, in my case, I just have one. And I chose a dynamic IP address here because really I don't really care. It's a lab. There's only one machine. So it's always going to boot with the .4 because the .0, 1, 2, 3 are reserved for the fabric. And then I've got this IP address here that I use for my purposes because I'm using this I'm connecting to those virtual machines from the internet myself. So I'm connecting when I want to. I'm SSHing to, because those are Linux VMs, to 10, 1382, 107 to 15. But I could add here another IP configuration if I needed to. If I wanted to have another IP address here, I guess I would write it ipconfig2, and then maybe I would have a dynamic or static IP address depending on what I want, and a public IP address, which is another object that I would use if I needed to. Right? So it's kind of a quick overview of the important objects. And there's network security groups, you can assign that. I don't necessarily have enough time to go into details and all of these things, but in a nutshell, it's kind of what I wanted to show at a high level right now. So, moving on to the next section is really like routing in Azure Virtual Networks. I keep saying it's different than on a physical network, but why is that different? What changes? Okay, so route tables are not uncommon. And for those of you guys who are used to working with routers, whoever the vendor is, there's always some sort of a route table somewhere. So a simplified view of what it looks like in Azure is something like that, where you have like the destination IPs, and you have the route table often has this, right? There's the destination IP and where should I go? So in this specific example, there is hold on here. There's these two that say VNet local. That's an example of two address spaces, to get back to a question we had earlier around multiple address space inside of the VNet. So that would be these two. And then you've got the remote one here. Let's say remote, gateway IP as the next hop, and 000. That's a generic one. But let's look a little bit more into how it actually is in Azure. So in Azure, there is essentially three different components of a system route table. Right, so the local VNet routes, as I said, they're the one that include and that are defined by the VNet's address space. Note I didn't say the subnets. Right, so if your VNet has 12 subnets, and they're all carved out of one address space, so one CIDR block, that local VNet route will have only one entry, would be maybe that slash 16, slash 12, slash whatever you decided to put there. Although slash 12 is kind of big, I wouldn't advise you do that, but if you got this address space to use in Azure, it's all good. Then the cross-premises routes. So these routes come from the gateways that we have in Azure, like the virtual network gateway, so VPN gateway, and Express Route gateways. The routes that we learn in Azure will get there. And the internet routes is whatever doesn't match the rest. It's kind of the default route. Where is it going? Right? And you could override the internet route to send things back on premises by advertising the Quad Zero route. We sometimes refer to that in our documentation as forced tunneling, which is nothing else really than forcing the packets to go back home over some BGP route that we've learned. So if we look at an example here, just with the two subnets, and we have the two address spaces there, 1057 and 1032/24, got subnet 12, and then we have a gateway subnet. The gateway subnet is a required subnet because this is where we put the Azure native gateways. So there is the Express Route gateway and potentially the VPN gateway there. And on the far end of that, on the right end, you see customer network. So this is 10.100 and 192.168 for that example. So what does the route table look like? Well, it looks like two slides ago, right? Where we have the whatever is defined at the VNet level, which is the address space, and not the subnets, right? You don't see anything for subnet 1.2 or gateway subnet in there. And the other thing is we see also the routes that are remote. So the routes that is 10.100 and 192.168 that goes through Express Route. And finally, there's the route to the internet. And there's a question on the IAMs is where does the UDR fall? who will fall very soon. You will see that, right? I will show some of that later. How does a VNet know about the IP prefixes used in remote networks? Well, if you're using site-to-site VPN, there's two ways essentially you can configure it. If you use a route-based gateway or a policy-based gateway, so in both of these cases, you're gonna have to configure, and you know, you can statically configure them. So you would create a local network gateway object, which is an object in Azure that represents simply represents the remote end of it. So if on the customer network, you've got 10.100.0.0/16 and 192.168.0.0/16, and you want to statically configure that, here's what you're going to be doing. You will create that local network object. If I will be sharing this in momentarily, and you would have something like that, right? Where do I have one that's, yeah, this one is statically configured. So if you look at this, so here it is, right? So I've defined a VPN endpoint that you know, when I say that I'm creating a local network gateway thing, what I do is I tell Azure, hey, here's how you actually reach it. So you have the IP address that would represent your on-premises public IP address that you expose to the internet. And here's what I can find at, you know, at that end. So Azure knows that it can retrieve 10.1 and 10.11 and 10.2 and so on. So in my example, instead of 10.1 and 10.2, it would have been 10.100 and 192.168. So when you configure Azure like that with this information, this is what populates the route table, or these entries of the route table at the very least. So this is really static configuration, but you know, sometimes you want to go dynamic because it just makes it easier sometimes as your network evolves. Using BGP is a good idea. So you would BGP enable that connection object and you would do the BGP configurations. And we're not going to walk through the details of doing that, but you get the idea if you're familiar with routing protocols, which are quite useful in scenarios like that. So the next way to get routes that come from remote is using ExpressRoute. And ExpressRoute achieves a very similar thing, because conceptually, VPNs and ExpressRoute, and specifically the BGP enabled VPN and ExpressRoute from a networking standpoint, achieve a very, very, very similar thing. So the routes that you learn, that we learn from remote end, are going to be populated into the route tables and the route tables of subnet 1, 2, 3, and 4 and so on. So just as a quick summary, we have the local VNet routes and the cross premises routes and the internet route. That's the thing that we have. And then there's the user defined routes, which are in Azure, they are route tables. When I say they are route tables, is really the object that you create is a route table. And you know, a custom route table will contain one or more UDR, and each subnet could be assigned a different route table. And you can also assign it to the gateway subnet. So if we look at an example here of a very simple virtual network with three subnets actually, but just, you know, in that case, it has only one address space. So that's the one that you see there, 1057/16, and the other 000 route. That's essentially what it has. There's other routes. I will show it to them. I will show it to you guys a little bit later. But when you want to, for example, firewall the traffic between, you know, virtual machine 1 and virtual machine 4, then what you would use is, if you notice, there's the custom route table that appear on the left. If I use my pen, is it gonna work? Yeah. So you got these two things that appear here, and they will influence the routing by sending all traffic, like for example here, all traffic that's destined to this IP, well, there's a route that sends it there, right? And the virtual appliance would just reply, and the virtual network will send the packet there. And then on the way back, all you've got a route table that's associated with this subnet that trickles down to each and every VM in that subnet. And the route table says, hey, if you want to reach this IP, you really need to go through this IP here. And that box on the right is maybe your firewall, maybe your router, maybe your packet device inspection. That's a little bit what it looks like when you're doing this like within a virtual network. Now, if you have, you want to filter traffic that's coming from on premises, that could be via, you know, site to site VPN, or it could be via express route. Essentially, there's functionally speaking, it works in the same way. So you see the case here where there's a route table that is there and that says, well, if you want to talk back to on-premise, you need to go through here, right? Which makes sense. And then the virtual appliance says the traffic outbound, it's got a route because the default route table sends it to the VPN because it's a remote destination, and the VPN will simply send the traffic back home. And what happens on a return path? Well, something like that. Right? Or by default, the traffic just does this and goes into the VPN gateway and then just follows the, you know, the route table. So what happens with that? Well, it breaks. It breaks because the virtual appliance does not see the packet come back. So what happens is that you've got this network communication doing this and then the return traffic doing this. And when, you know, maybe that's a TCP SYN packet, maybe that's the SYN ACK. And when the ACK goes there, boom, it's broken, right? So what you want to do quite simply is just apply another route table right here on gateway subnet. So when you do that, you would just say, well, if ever you're trying to talk to 1057, well, send that packet to that virtual appliance here. And this is how it will all work. So do we have any best practices on UDR designs? Customer uses hub subscription for virtual appliance and they need UDR to all other subscriptions. Yeah, that's, I'm not sure. I will get you guys off mute and we can talk it verbally. But yes, there's ways of doing this, and there's multiple ways. There's not a single way of achieving that. And so essentially, same as I said, same approach works with VPNs or express routes. So things to know about user defined routes is it is a three tuple. So it works on the destination, and there will be the next, you have to choose what the next hop is. Virtual network means local. Local to the VNet. Virtual network gateway means the gateway itself. A virtual appliance is typically what we've seen in the other slides. And none means it's like a bit bucket. It's the equivalent of IP route 000 null zero. For those of you guys who are used to be working with some device, some vendors, sending this to null, it just essentially dumps the packet. And it will, all the route tables work using longest prefix match. So if there's two routes with the same prefix, so both routes with a slash 24, well, if there's a UDR rule for that, that's what it's going to follow. But if the UDR is a slash 16 and you got a more precise route at a slash 24, that's the slash 24 that will win. So best match is the longest prefix match. And the weight of these things is, you know, user defined route is taken into consideration first, BGP routes, and then the system built in routes. So yeah, too bad there isn't an option to use the third party as a VNet gateway. Well, you can use a third party and do the VPN to a third party. It's not like it's not possible. There's a lot of customers that do this. You would not be able to do this for your express route gateway, but you can use your own gateways to connect using VPN, and you can VPN over express route if you want to. Absolutely doable. But you will need to use UDRs when you do that. So to my next slide. So route tables are assigned to subnets, but eventually they trickle down to NICs. And we'll show a little bit what this looks like, right? If you're troubleshooting some routing, the effective route thing that we see here is effective routes that you see when you're looking at your NIC or when you're looking at your route tables, you can see the same output. I'm gonna be showing it to you later. Is very helpful. So you see Like in this case, you see that 172, 16, slash 23, and 192.168, and so on. These are the two routes, like the 172.16 slash 23 that says virtual network, that's the virtual network's address space. 192.168 slash 16 VNet peering, as the name suggests, it is an appeared virtual network. 000 route is the internet route. And then you got 10 slash 8, 25 slash 8, 164 slash 10, and 172.16 slash 12. These are routes that are there by default. So, and the destination is none, which means that the packets are dumped for these things until there's another route, a better route, or an equivalent route. Because remember, the default route will be overridden by BGP learned routes or by cross-premises routes or by user-defined routes. And those networks are either bogus or not bogus, but we don't want to route this by default anywhere else than in the bit bucket. And it, when you want to fix it, you absolutely do. And another tool is IP Flow Verify that I've demoed at another show a couple weeks ago, which essentially makes it easy or easier for you to see what the next hop of that packet should be based on the routing rules, that the effective route table really is what gets applied there. So let me show you a little bit of how these things work in the portal. And so here I've got this thing. So take a look at an express route circuit. That this is one place where you probably want to take a look at occasionally, where if you've got express route on your in your environment, and if you were to look at the private peering, the private peering is the peering that connects to your virtual network, to your VNet, and it's also the peering that advertises your IPs that you have internally to Azure. So if I take a look at this and I actually hit the get route table, I would see what my express route circuit sees. But right now, it's not going to see a whole lot because it's actually misconfigured, and it's misconfigured voluntarily because I needed to misconfigure it for some reason. But you're going to see that the routes that exist in the VNets that I have in my topology, which I will show you later, are going to show up there within a few seconds. I see in the IM chat, yeah, some customer want to fail safe if ER fails. Well, there's each ER circuit has actually two paths, or primary and the secondary path. Plus, some customers have a second express route circuit. I don't have one in my subscription in my environment, but it is, you know, that's how it is. And customers can also have a backup to express route using VPNs. This is a very common scenario. So here what I see is actually the IP address space that gets advertised to my express route from the virtual networks. So that 10.0.0 or 10.1, you know, what I have here in the top, 10.1/16, 2, 3, 4, 11, 21, this is my environment. This is what I'm receiving at the express route's end of that circuit. So this is something that might be useful, and those routes will normally get advertised to what I have on premise. Now, the other piece of this is, if I look, for example, at, let's say that I wanna look at a virtual machine, and I wanna see what the route table from that virtual machine standpoint looks like. I do have, let me regroup this by resource group. I have a lot of different objects here. And if I go to the bottom of it, I see, like, that's the resource group that I have my things running in. And I might want to take a look at, you know, what is my route table looks like for this machine, for VM2. So I'll have to dig onto its network interface. Because remember, route tables, they are applied at the NIC level. So if I click on that NIC, I've got the effective routes that I have to click here on the bottom, and then we'll need to be patient the time that the portal is able to retrieve this routing information, and you will see where things actually get routed. So here I have a whole bunch of things. It might be a little small, so let me zoom that a little bit for you. And I do see, like, I have this 10-2 10-2 here, address space. It's not very nice. And I've got a whole bunch of others that are either defined as part of the virtual network, which means they are address spaces for my virtual network. If we remember what we talked about earlier, and then 10.21/16 and 10.22, they are via VNet peering. And 10.1, 10.1, 10.11, 10.11 via virtual network gateway. So they are routes that exist elsewhere in my environment through a virtual network gateway, which is an express route gateway in my case. And there's a default 0.0 that's there. There's this and there's that because of some other reasons. Won't necessarily dig into each of them. Plus there's the default other things. So those routes are, this is quite useful to understand where are your packets routed. Sometimes you have issues where you have unidirectional packet flow working and not bidirectional. So why is it that you can get the packet, but the reply somehow doesn't make it? This tool is very useful to figure it out. And another way to see it is by looking at the route tables. So the route tables, this icon here on the left, is actually the user-defined routes. So I know that mine are there, and I will look, for example, at VNet 2, Subnet 1. That's the naming convention that I've used. So if I click on this guy, and you know, I would see here the entries that I have, and I use this convention here, which is essentially to write the address prefix in, replacing dots by dashes, essentially. So I see what I have there. But if I want to see the effective result of that, and you also see, by the way, where it's applied. So in that case, well, it's called VNet 2, Subnet 1. So not surprisingly, I've applied it to VNet 2 and Subnet 1, as you can see here. And if I want to, I clicked too far here. So if I do want to see the effective routes, I can also, so I can go at the route table and just click on effective routes. Brings me essentially the same thing as I had while browsing to the virtual machine, where here, you know, you have the subnet and then you can choose what NIC. They will all get the same result. So if I choose the NIC here, VM2, and I give it a few more seconds, we'll end up seeing the same information we were seeing on the other screen that I had earlier. It's exactly the same thing. It's just another way to get to the same place, right? So, in a nutshell, that's the useful tools to retrieve that information when you have issues or you're wondering how does that work. And we'll look at the IP flow verify later, but that's, you know, that's one of the things that we can do. Now, let's talk a little bit about virtual appliances. I say AKA NFV, Network Function Virtualization. There's some people that also use this acronym. Multiple functions, right, can be implemented in virtual appliances. I won't read them all, but you know, firewall and SD-WAN is typical ideas that you can implement there. The features that are important and are critical to that is, well, two things: user-defined routes. Otherwise, you know, your virtual appliance will just not be in the data path. If it's not in the data path, then it's not going to see packets, and obviously, it's not going to work. So we've seen in previous slides that it's using custom route tables and applying them to the proper subnets. This is how you do this. And the other thing that you want to have is the IP forwarding checkbox on that NIC, or one of the NICs, or all the NICs of your virtual machine. What that does is it allows Azure to allow packets that are not sourced from the IPs of this box, just like router. You know, router, when it routes a packet, the destination IP of that packet or the source is typically not the router. IP forwarding checking allows that, right? So how many NICs do you need? That's an interesting question. In theory, you need one. And in fact, in my lab, I only have one, and I will show it to you. From a performance standpoint, a virtual appliance with, or a virtual machine in general, with one or eight NICs doesn't have more throughput. It's a virtualized NIC. It uses the same physical hardware. Although if you have eight NICs on a virtual machine, it's probably because it's a very big machine, so it probably has a lot of throughput. But that big machine could have only one NIC and have the same throughput. So it really depends on kind of the philosophy of your virtual appliance, I would say. And you, I would stand it in its own subnet if I were to have a single NIC thing. If I have a three NIC thing, I've seen scenarios like that. Some vendors could recognize if that's how they do it, right? Where there's maybe a management subnet and maybe one NIC in the trust and untrusted subnet. But can we agree on one thing, that that doesn't scale, right? If you have like seven subnets, you've got to have the biggest sized virtual machine that you possibly can. Maybe you want it to be big, but what if you have 15 or 60? I don't know. Actually, I don't know how many subnets you can put in a VNet. I didn't try to hit the limit. I don't know it by heart, but you see why it doesn't scale. So typically, here's what I would recommend you. So 2048, that's a whole lot of subnets. There's no way you would want to have a virtual machine with 2000 interfaces. It would make it pretty painful to manage. Just like on a physical network, you might have more, right? Because you could maybe use sub interfaces and VLANs and these kind of things, but you don't need to do that in Azure because it just works differently. There's some magic happening when you apply a UDR, magic quote unquote, obviously, that when you apply a UDR, it will simply forward the packet to the right place. So it's relatively easily done, but you need to do it, and you need to do it right for that, you know, for that thing to work. So, yeah, I've got, I see a comment here. I see customers look for three NICs for virtual appliances, and absolutely okay to have designs like this, to have designs with three NICs. What you don't want is, well, I need to add another subnet, so therefore I need a fourth NIC and a fifth NIC. And eventually you reach the limit, which is what doesn't scale. And that's what you do not want, right? It's the last thing you want. So I will pause here for just a second. And we'll just do a quick, you're gonna see my my drawing skills here. I like the paper, it reminds me of school. So here's kind of my topology where I have, let's call it VNet 3. And there's a VPN gateway here, an Azure VPN gateway. It's actually connected to a virtual appliance. I'll let you guess what the name of the vendor is. And you're going to see what it looks like. Because the reason I'm mentioning it is I will show it to you. So this is at 10.2.1.6, and VNet 3 is at 10.3.00/16. So let me make it this a little simpler. And you've got VNet 2 here. That's at 10.2/16. It also has other address spaces. I will talk about that later, but the main one is this, and here's VNet 22, that's at 10.22/16. It's getting crowded here. So we've got this machine here that's at 10.2.1.4. I only really have one subnet here on that thing. Let me just make it a little bit bigger. And here I've got an Express Route gateway here. So that's a built-in gateway of Azure that connects to the MSEE, which stands for Microsoft Enterprise Edge Router. That's at the Express Route location, right? So I've got another Express Route gateway here, and I've got this VNet here called VNet 1. So this guy is at 10.1/16. You've got one VM here running at 10.1.1.4. And I've got my gateway subnet here, and I've got my gateway subnet here. And, you know, we could represent that these two are on the same subnet because they actually are. And here I've got this VM at 10.22.1.4. And I've got a VM running here at 10. And this guy has two address spaces, just reminded me of that. That's important for what I want to show to you. So there's 10.3.1.4 and then 10.5.1.4. What does this whole thing look like in real life? Well, that's kind of the lay of the land. And let me, I'm just making sure I'm pulling the right terminal windows here. So they are all Linux VMs. So I've got this here, VM2, which is, let me give the name of that thing just right here. This guy is VM2. This guy is VM22, They all have very complex names, as you see. VM3, plus there's another guy here called VM5. So here's the thing. I'm going to use my machine here at VNet2, which, if you know, we look at its IP address, it really is the 10.2.1.4 that I have there. And if I'm trying to find, 10.2.1.6, that's the CSR, actually is a router that's just there. So easy, I can get to it. And if I, maybe I try to see, can I get to 10.3.1.4? Yeah, it works, right? So you've got the path from the CSR going to the left to the VM, and apparently it works in both directions because I do actually see a response. Now, let me drag over that virtual machine here, which actually said VM5, but you know what? It's actually not, it's not 5, it's 5.1. It doesn't change anything here. So I've got this 10.5.1.4 machine here. And let's say that I'm trying from here to ping 10.2.1.4. Oh, surprise, surprise. It's not working. Well, it could be many, many reasons, right? The VPN could be not configured properly between VM5 and VM2, for one thing. Or maybe there's something else. But I've got this ping running conveniently here. So maybe I'll just, for some, there's some geeks out there. I could run this and just try to see, am I even receiving the packets? Oh, that's interesting. I do see the packets. So why is it that it's not working? Well, at least I know that the packets make it in one direction, right? They go all the way from VM5 to, if I look at the flow here, obviously they do something like that in one direction. Now, there's a return packet. Where does that guy go? What should we do? Well, one of the things that we can do certainly is look at the portal. So let me look at VM number two, or subnet one, right? VNet2 subnet one, this is exactly VM2, that's the machine, 852 is 3 of the digits that are added by Azure by default. And if I look at the routes here, well, do I see, so I see 10.3, actually says it's invalid here because I've got another 10.3 that's, where is my other 10.3? I got it here. So that's a user-defined route. It points to the appliance. That's a tricky reason. But you know, it works. But if I'm looking for the 10.5, that's really, we're troubleshooting for 10.5 here. I don't see it there, right? I don't see it in that list. There's no 10.5 here. And one other way that we could have found that is if we're using the network watcher, and we look at what the next hop is. And when you do that, you have to select what your resource group is, what machine that is, so that's VM2, and source IP, like by default, it's the IP of that machine, and I'm looking for 10.5.1.4, right? So I click next hop, and I wait a few seconds, and I'll probably see that this is not going anywhere. Hopefully, right? So, none. What is none? That's the bit bucket. So maybe we have to go to the route tables. Maybe that's where our answer is. So if I go there and I look at the route table for subnet VNet2, subnet one, you know, it's always there where I'm working. And I look at the routes that show up on the right here, I will see my 10.3.0.0/16, but hey, I don't, oh, I just clicked on it, shouldn't have, but hey, I don't see anything for 10.5. So how about I just add an entry? And let's say that 10.5.1.4, well, it's not there. Sorry, I know that. my bad. So let me add it. 10.5.0.0/16. Oh, 10.5.0.0/16. And where should I send that? Well, it so happens that I need to send this to a virtual network gateway, virtual appliance, sorry. 10.2.1.6, which is the IP of my virtual appliance, which by the way, could be in high availability. So while this happens, let's come back to where we were, right? We've got this ICMP thing running. So this one and that one. So here I could just, we see the ICMP packets still make it, right? Obviously, I didn't change any of that. And it is probably going to end up working. So we see that it's working, right? There's been only so much troubleshooting efforts that were done, but we're getting close to the top of the hour. So I'm running a little bit over what I thought. But I think, and I'm hopeful that this was an interesting exercise to see kind of what you can do and actually how you do it. I didn't show everything. I didn't show how I configured the appliance, but the appliance is something that you guys would be, if you would deploy, if you were to deploy that, I would assume that you would have some familiarity with it. So I will be opening up the, I'll be unmuting the audience. So if anyone wants to ask a question, I'm more than happy to answer. So just get off mute and go right ahead. Will the 10.5/16 subnet will not get pushed automatically? It won't get pushed automatically to the, if I look at my, let me just go here. If I look at my, because that I have this VNet that exists here with the 10.5 address space, it won't populate this one's route table because it's totally disconnected, right? You've got an NVA here. That's not an Azure thing. So you need to tell Azure here, somebody has got to be able to find the 10.5. So how does that happen with a route table, right? We've seen why and how it helps. And yeah, absolutely. This video will be posted. Thanks for the nice comments. Really, really appreciate that. And if anyone wants to get off mute, I kind of heard some noise there. Feel free to do so. Otherwise, you guys can always reach back. Happy to be helping.
Hello, thanks for the session. It was so good. Only just have a question, like, so that if we have a multiple subscription,
yes,
and if they have a multiple subnet, is that we need to publish the subnet in all the UDI? Like, we need to create the routing table manually?
Well, it's a tricky question. All subnets, I mean, multiple subscriptions typically mean multiple VNets.
Yes.
And you could have, like in my example here, that this could be in subscription A and this could be in subscription B. I mean, because they're VNet peered in that case, that's VNet peering, and this could be in a totally different subscription. It could be your subscription and the rest could be mine. It's just VPN between two endpoints. So it really depends, right? So if that's the scenario, then you will have to add the UDRs here because it doesn't, Azure won't guess about them because you're not using the Azure built-in the built-in VPN gateways. If you did use the Azure built-in VPN gateways, that's a different discussion. So it's not a yes or no or easy, clean answer. It's it might end up being clean, but the point of the fact is it depends. If you're doing this with different subscription, but in this model, which could become a hub and spoke model where you can have multiples that are peered, then the route tables get populated automatically. So here, if I try to ping and go to this box, I don't need to do anything special. It's just there. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah. So instead of VNet VPN gateway, if I go have a VNet peering, then I don't need to have a need to add the 10.5 dot subnet, right?
No, exactly. You're exactly right. So if I look at here, that's the 51 box. That's not the right one. But if I look at one, okay. So VM2. VM2 here represents the one that's just right there on the right. So if I try to do, and this works, and trust me, it doesn't work because I did some magic. It works because the peering is there.
Okay.
And as you can see, the response time is pretty fast too. VNet peering is the same speed essentially as if it's in the same VNet. In fact, if I ping 1.6, 10.2.1.6, that's in the same VNet, you see the same kind of speeds, right? 0.9. That answer the question?
Yeah, thanks Oliver.
Okay, any other question?
One last one, Olivier. So they with the multiple subnets, multiple CIDR addresses in a single VNet, are they routable immediately in between the still subnets in each one of them?
Yeah, okay. You have nothing special to do. They just work. So if you, on the left example I have with those two VMs, they ping each other with without any, I had didn't have to do anything really. It just works.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Anyone else has a burning question? Are we getting all 30 seconds back from this hour? Guys, I really appreciate your time, by the way. It's great to prepare for this, and hopefully you enjoy it and you appreciate it. And I will post the video hopefully later today or sometime this weekend or Monday. So all have yourselves a great, great weekend. Thank you.